You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education podcast special, where we'll be talking about the results of the 2015-2016 THE World University Rankings. My name's Chris Parr, I'm joined by Rankings editor Phil Beatty, Rankings reporter Ellie Bothwell and student content editor Carly Minsky. Phil, we'll come to the all-important top 10 in a moment. Stick around for that. If you do want to get it now, head to www.thewur.com. We'll come to the top 10 in a moment, but first, it's a big year for the rankings, Phil. You've made some changes to the way that they're pulled together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really exciting time for us. It's the 12th annual edition we've published, so we've been in this game for a long time now, but this is a dramatically different proposition this year. We've basically been using third-party data providers to help us build the rankings over the last 12 years, and for the first time ever we've brought all the data in-house. We've collected our own institutional data, which has allowed us to reach out to a much wider group of institutions. We have around 1,200 universities have given us detailed data on their profiles. We've carried out our own reputation survey for the first time, which has allowed us to get a much better geographical spread of responses. We put that out in many different languages. And we've switched the bibliometric source from Thomson Reuters Web of Science to Elsevier's Scopus, so we're capturing a much larger group of refereed journal articles. There's about 23,000 journal articles, which has allowed us to analyse 11 million research papers, up from 6 last year, and look at about 50 million citations. So we have a much more comprehensive, a much more inclusive ranking. And the big news for me is that we're ranking 800 universities across the world this year instead of 400 like we had last year.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. And does that mean that sort of we can expect some surprises this year, perhaps some turbulence in the institutions that perform well?
Yeah, I think we have to be really honest here and say, look, the changes we've made do create some movement that isn't entirely attributed to a university's performance. We're seeing, for example, the inclusion of 400 new universities in the ranking. They haven't all just neatly fitted on the bottom of the list. Some of them are coming in the 300, 400 area. So universities are moving by virtue of the fact that there are more institutions in the list. The move to Elsevier means we're capturing far more research outputs, which can change the picture, and we're getting a more balanced picture from around the world. So although the methodology is the same, the individual indicators are the same, and the weightings are the same, the underlying data has improved to the point where we don't want to encourage people to overinterpret movement from one year to the next. We think this is almost a fresh beginning. So although you can get a lot of insight from the rankings, we can draw some big conclusions about some of the bigger picture stories, mm-hmm. We won't be putting too much emphasis on somebody's gone up or down as in terms of individual universities.
Okay, so the top 10 2015-16 Times Higher Education World University Rankings. At 10, it's the University of Chicago. At ETH Zurich is at number 9. Imperial College London at 8. Princeton University at 7. Harvard at 6. MIT at 5. The University of Cambridge is at 4. Stanford is at 3. The University of Oxford at 2. And California Institute of Technology, Caltech, remains at number 1, as it has been for the last few years. Ellie, you've written the news article, you've written for the supplement that comes out to accompany these rankings. That's the very top level findings, if you like, the top 10. But what other things have you identified in this year's results?
Yeah, I mean, so as Phil said, you know, it's difficult to make sort of direct comparisons from last year. But in terms of sort of bigger picture stuff, we've kind of noticed some standout in countries in Europe. So Germany has performed really well this year. It's got 20 universities in the top 200. It's got 3 of these in the top 50. Mm-hmm. Other countries in Europe, the Netherlands and Switzerland are both doing really well. As you mentioned, ETH Zurich is 9th this year. Mm. And that's the first time an institution outside of the UK and the US has made the top 10 for a decade. Yeah. And you know, this isn't just sort of to do with methodology changes. You know, it's an institution that's been rising up, for the last few years. So it's good news that it makes the top 10. in other countries, the US has sort of continued to sort of decline. And this is another trend that we've seen over the last few years. And Japan as well isn't doing so well.
Interesting, yeah. Phil, I suppose to come back to you very, very, very quickly there. I mean, the Germany story is an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, if you do compare year on year for the country, which I think is probably fair enough, it's jumped from 12 to 20. Is there a reason for that? Is that to do with there being more institutions in there, or is it to do with the nuances of the methodology?
I think it's I think Germany gets a boost from the changes to data. You know, we are capturing a better spread of European non-English language publications with the new analysis of Scopus journals. And I think we've been a bit more, you know, the reputation surveys have been less weighted towards the US. But I think there's no question Germany has been putting a huge, huge focus on nurturing top institutions. You know, it's had its excellence initiative that's put billions of euros into the German system. It's injected competition in Germany. It's had a very egalitarian system. It's now actually given special funding and special rewards to top institutions. I think we're seeing the effects of a concerted policy in Germany to keep its top universities more competitive. There is the other thing. I think Germany has realized how important rankings are in terms of their ability to bring in international talent and recruit students. So they've engaged much more closely with rankings, data submissions, data definitions. So I think there's a clever approach from Germany, funded by the Foreign Office there, to actually look at rankings carefully and report the data more consistently and more according to our data definitions rather than how they would report it in Germany. So there's a bit of methodology, but clear success of a government-backed policy.
Mm. And a couple of other quick headlines there. The UK, we're sat in London, we may as well mention the UK. It's had a good year, 34 institutions in the top 100, four from London making the top 30. A bit further afield, the National University of Singapore takes the Asian top spot. China has two institutions in the elite top 50. To see what they are, head over to www.theuwr.com. But Phil, you referenced students there, Germany sort of trying to target the international student market. Of course, these rankings are, Carly, of great interest to the international student body, or the potential international student body.
Yeah, sure. Well, we know that lots of students are using the rankings to make that decision. And what we haven't done, but what we're just about to do, is really interpret all the information that we have in the rankings in a way that's relevant for students. So we're serving up lots of articles, whether that's guides to universities in specific countries or news articles about the rankings, about things that are relevant to students. And we're not just talking about the kind of information that you find in the rankings, but we're kind of going beyond that because there are other factors that are relevant to international students and domestic students. Things like tuition fees, value for money, contact hours with staff members. So all of that information is going to be available to students through all of these articles that we're writing.
Mm, and the rankings this year, I should say, are far more interactive than they have been in previous years. You can look at things like student to staff ratio. You can filter the results in a way that sort of makes sense to you. So do head along to the site and have a play around there. But Phil, just to conclude, I mean, these rankings are very different to ones that we've published in previous years, but there's still that consistency at the top, isn't there? Caltech, Oxford, Stanford, Cambridge, MIT, these sort of big powerhouse institutions. I think we've called them the Big Six, the Big Seven in the past. They're hard to shift, aren't they? They seem to dominate these rankings year after year.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty exciting. We've had ETH Zurich penetrating the top 10. You know, as Ellie said, it's the first time a university from outside the US and UK has actually cracked the top 10, but it's been creeping up there. Yeah, it's a little bit of a shame, actually, because we've talked a lot about, you know, will Peking, will Tsinghua, will National University of Singapore, will they really start penetrating the upper echelons? And actually, Asia's not had a fantastic year. NUS Singapore is Asia's number one, but it's actually slipped one place. So the top-ranked Asian university is still 26th in the world. Mm-hmm. Tsinghua and Peking are comfortably in the top 50, and they've both moved up a little. But yeah, it's going to be extremely difficult to crack these top institutions. You know, certainly the US privates get incredible resources through tuition fees, through massive endowments. They enjoy incredible riches. They're at the heart of all the academic networks around publishing, around talent acquisition. And I think it's going to be a long time till we see dramatic change there. It's interesting, though, that Harvard, you know, traditionally almost perceived as the default world's best university is in its lowest position. It's in sixth place. And I think that does demonstrate that, you know, there's a huge amount of competition at the top. You have to run exceptionally fast to stand still. Harvard hasn't got worse by any stretch of the imagination. It's just not improved as quickly as some of the others. So its income was increased, but it hasn't increased as much as Stanford's income, for example. Its faculty-student ratios have sort of stagnated, others have improved. So it's a classic case that everybody's getting better. The tide rises and all boats are lifting. So even the rapidly improving universities in Asia are still struggling to really crack those upper echelons.
Indeed, interesting stuff. Well, that's all for this World University Rankings podcast. If you do want to follow us on Twitter, you'll find us at THE World Uni Rank. The web address, as I've said, is www.thewur.com, or you'll find us through the usual timeshighereducation.com route as well. But that's all for this World University Rankings podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.